taking us this morning to not the whole psalm, because it's a long one, but the first six verses of Psalm 18. It's a psalm of David. I love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer. My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I call to the Lord, who is worthy of praise, and I am saved from my enemies. The cords of death entangled me, the torrents of destruction overwhelmed me, the cords of the grave coiled around me, the snares of death confronted me. In my distress, I called to the Lord. I cried to my God for help. From his temple he heard my voice. My cry came before him into his ears. You've heard of the British stiff upper lip. I was taught that very much at boarding school. Maybe boys can cry, but grown men don't cry. Well, fortunately, David was not British. He cried, wept tears. And you know, even if men don't cry, so often they're crying inside, deeply crying inside. And of course, when they get to the end of their tether, then they lose it. And it all pours out. Weeping figures a lot in the Bible, especially in the Psalms. There's a whole book of weeping with a title which is all about weeping, Lamentations. Here's an example, just one, from Psalm 42, where David says, "My tears have been my food day and night." Psalm 42 and verse 3. Again, a psalm of David. But it wasn't confined to David. Those of you who know my situation now, and Isabel's in particular, which affects me deeply, we'll realize that we're in a place of tears, a place of weeping, and crying out to God. Oh, well, an awful lot of verses have come back to me during this time, and to Isabel as well. Here's one from Asaph, and I love Asaph's psalms. I commend them to you. Whom have I in heaven but thee? When we're at that deepest point of need, who do we have? Who did David have? Who did Asaph have? They cried out to the God. And their cry came into his ears. That little phrase there in verse 6. I've underlined in my Bible, and I actually wrote against it, sermon. And that was years and years ago, and I've just got to preaching on it. So, I've given this talk a title, Tears and Ears. My tears, your tears, God's ears. So here in Psalm 18, we see David's tears and crying out to God, and God hears into his ears. I can't possibly describe the whole psalm. It's obviously an important psalm because virtually exactly the same psalm occurs in 2 Samuel 22. And there are other psalms which are similar. Somebody has called this particular psalm grateful retrospect. He is remembering the times when he cried out to God, and when he knew that God had heard him. I wonder whether we ever rehearse those times in our lives which were crucial, crisis points, when we did cry out to God. And we were very close to God. The time passes. So he cried and the Lord lifted him. Somebody has said, you don't really know Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have. I'll say that again. You don't really know Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have. So, tears. And we'll come on to the ears. It's always a great comfort to me that Jesus, the man, Son of Man, perfect man, cried. He wept tears. He wept tears, we're told explicitly, at the grave of Lazarus, the shortest verse in the Bible, for those who count such things. Jesus wept. He wept over Jerusalem. Oh, how I would have gathered you as a hen gathers her chicks, but you wouldn't. He cried over Jerusalem. In the Garden of Gethsemane, how Jesus cried. His tears were not drops of water, they were drops of blood in the Garden of Gethsemane. Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7 describes Jesus' agony in this way, with strong crying and tears was his agony. Yes, precious odors, fragrances, come so often from plants which are crushed. And remember how the Bible describes Jesus' crying and his tears and his agony as a fragrant offering. God was crushed. God wept tears over us. And that was the most fragrant offering. I'm glad Jesus cried. Probably there are not many opera buffs in the group here this morning. Anybody want to own up to that? No. But there is something interesting about operas, grand opera. And that is, the best known are the very best tune in the whole opera seems to always come at the crisis point. Heard of songs in the night? Your song of dereliction in the night? That's what Jesus hears. So often music is in a minor key, isn't it? A lot of life, a lot of the Christian life, don't say this to some Christians, a lot of the Christian life is in the minor key. If you look at Psalm 88, and I sometimes wonder when I speak to people who think life's all hunky-dory and, you know, I'm on my way to heaven, bop, 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 bop. Have they ever read what the Bible says about the Christian life, the life of faith. You read a psalm like Psalm 88, it is unrelenting misery from a man of God. Tears. But the tears of a believer come into the ears of our God. I was trying to think of a human illustration. Mothers among us, you'll know this. Well, husbands and fathers will know it as well. A tiny child is in a room maybe, you know, yards away in the house, and you're all together in the living room, okay, and the child whimpers. Who hears the child first? The mother. Sometimes miraculously so. Am I not right? Who sees and hears your crying first? God does. God has a voice, yes. A voice that thunders sometimes. He spoke the whole creation into existence. He has a voice. God has eyes. Yes, he has eyes. He sees everything. He is omniscient. He knows everything about everything, including you and your depths of your heart. He's one who has eyes. But he's also one who has ears. And his ears are very sensitive. He hears the cry of his child. So God is not deaf. Nor does God need a hearing aid. You know, the gods of Baal, there on Mount Carmel. Elijah almost mocked them, saying, "Cry louder. Maybe he's asleep." Our God is not like that. He needs nothing to help him hear. He hears. Now, this goes against somebody's theology here this morning. He doesn't need an intermediary either. I know Jesus intercedes for us, taking our prayers into God's presence. But he hears the cry of his children directly. There's been a rash of companies using the word direct, like direct line insurance and direct this and direct that. Our God is direct. Just wanted to read a verse from Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 22, which says this so clearly. Hebrews 10, 22. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess. For he who promised is faithful. Let us draw near to God with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith. You may be assured that when you cry out to God, he hears you. It is the cry of faith to the ear of mercy. What is prayer? What is prayer when you're in the middle of a crisis? When your head is full of tears, what is prayer? When you sense that you're trapped, think of a miner down a mine. And the people who constructed the mine had the foresight to sink an emergency escape shaft, or to sink a pipeline down with oxygen so that you may survive. Or think of a big house with a grand big staircase at the front, but there's a back staircase as well, and the house gets on fire. Nobody can go up the grand staircase to heaven, but there's a back staircase which is not affected by the fire. That's prayer. There is always a staircase. There is always a supply. Hidden maybe sometimes, but the cry of the child of God discovers that. God is not deaf, nor is he tone deaf. I won't embarrass people here this morning by saying, those who are prepared to admit that they're tone deaf, but I know people who are, because they don't realize it. So they don't hear music in the same way, presumably. I'm not tone deaf. I was at a concert on Friday night, which had been long since booked. Actually, it was for me and Isabel to go, but Isabel, as you know, has been very poorly. So I went. She was still in hospital. They were performing the second half, Rachmaninoff's Third Symphony, which is one of my favorite pieces of music, which is in A minor. Some of the greatest pieces of music are written in the minor key. Well, they may go into the major key at times, but their characteristic is the minor key. Reading the notes about Rachmaninoff's Third Symphony, I read that there was a long period of time since he'd written his Second Symphony, or anything significant. He was exiled from Russia. He landed up in America, and he just longed with a passionate longing for his Russian homeland, but he was not allowed to go. If he had, he'd been arrested for the music. Faith is a longing for God. And that is music to God's ear. He is David, time and again longing for God, with tears in his eyes, in the minor key. I'm sure there was a lot of groaning which couldn't be uttered in words. Like Paul says in Romans chapter 8. And the Holy Spirit takes those groanings, those tears, and presents those before God the Father. Sitting and praying with somebody earlier this week in the hospital, actually, who was also visiting, they used an illustration which will stick with me. The illustration was of a huge mountain and a very deep loch. I suppose Loch Ness might possibly qualify, I don't know if that's a deep loch, but anyway. What he said in his prayer was that God's greatness is reflected in the depth of the loch. The height of his love is expressed as a reflection in the depth of my being, and especially in those times which are dark and deep. You know, well, I can't really say this. I thought I walked with God. But after personal experiences recently, I feel as if I didn't. And only now am I just beginning to learn of his ways, which, by the way, are past finding out. I'll never find them out. But I can walk in his way. And if his way is the way of Job, and it will never get as extreme as that, I can still trust in him. And that is music. Beautiful, beautiful music to his ears. The height of the mountain is something that David the psalmist goes on to talk about, which we didn't have time to look at. The earth trembled and quaked, the foundations of the mountains shook, they trembled because he was angry, smoke rose from his nostrils, blah, blah, blah. The mountains, you know, the grandeur of all his works in creation. But there is no greater grandeur than the reflection of his mercy in my dark times. I must draw to a close. I mentioned Job, what depth of sorrow. If you were to read chapter 3 of Job, if you're a good evangelical, you'll be absolutely shocked at what Job says out of his mouth. Curses the day he was born, and such like. But Job was a man of faith. Despite all that, what God recognized in Job, he wants to recognize in us. Job was real with God. There were no pretenses, no religiosity, no veneer. He was absolutely real. And he said to God, like it was for him. God is glad when we are real with him. Do you know why? Because he wants your heart. He wants your heart. I, of course, don't know what you're going through at the moment. I don't know what you have been through in the past. I know sometimes it feels as if you're having open heart surgery and you're full awake. Fully awake and heart surgery. Boy, that's going to hurt. But do you know who the surgeon is? The surgeon is God, who is an expert in the human heart. Jesus is the skilled surgeon. And if I trust him, despite all that hurts, that it's his fingers which are manipulating my heart, that honors him. It honors him. So I encourage you, if you're going through bad times, not to be just resigned to it, or what will be, will be. No, no. But to make faith a positive, active thing. Active in my heart. And then I guess that's at least beginning to walk with God.